Good morning, Connecticut. To our friends across the sound, it's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're going to introduce you to Circle of Care and tell you how this Connecticut-based organization is supporting children with cancer and their families from the day of diagnosis through treatment and beyond, providing direct, practical, emotional, and financial support. And we're going to invite you to come out and party with Circle of Care and learn more about the organization at a fantastic benefit concert they're hosting next weekend in Hamden. Then we're going to check in with the CEO of Connecticut's Healthcare Insurance Exchange, Access Health CT, to catch up on how all the issues playing out in Washington are impacting individuals benefiting from the Affordable Care Act here at home. And then we'll close celebrating the Healthy Eyes Alliance. As kids head back to school, we're going to learn about the critical role the Alliance plays in helping identify and treat vision-related problems in students and children, as well as a number of other programs designed to save and preserve our sight. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. In a joint collaboration, AARP Connecticut and the Central Connecticut State University Office of Continuing Education are hosting a free fraud prevention event featuring Frank Abagnale, one of the world's most respected authorities on forgery, embezzlement, and secure documents. It's coming up on Wednesday, September 27th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. with an information fair followed by the main event at 7. Registration for the free event is required online, however, so go to aarp.cvent.com/AbagnaleCT2017 or by calling 877-926-8300. Well, we're opening the program with a brand new friend this morning and how we have missed the great work being done by Circle of Care up to this point. It just boggles my mind because they do such great work. And I'll tell you, if we got music lovers out there or folks that just like to hang out and have a great party on a Friday night, we've got an event coming up for you this coming Friday, September 1st. So please stay tuned to listen for that. We're so pleased to welcome to the program the president and founder of the Circle of Care that supports children with cancer and their families from the day of diagnosis through treatment and beyond. They provide direct, practical, emotional, and financial support until no family has to hear the words, your child has cancer. Circle of Care is going to be there to support, guide, and provide inspiration for families and loved ones and those with the diagnosis to move forward, wherever that journey may lead. Those were words that I've heard. Those are words that our guest, Liz Salguero, has heard. She is the founder and president of Circle of Care. Liz, so great to make your acquaintance, and such great work you guys are doing. Thanks for everything you do for the kids and their families.
Thank you.
So let's go back in history first to talk about your story.
Well, we came into this world of childhood cancer the way most parents do, very unexpectedly. In the fall of 2001, my 2.5-year-old son was sick with a few kind of phantom illnesses and fevers, and we couldn't really pin our finger on what was going wrong. But by the end of the fall in December, he was diagnosed with leukemia. It began a 2.5-year journey for us in this world of childhood cancer. It's very different when you have a child diagnosed with cancer. One, it's very unexpected, but two, you don't know anybody else to talk to about this. So it's very, very isolating. And during the time of his treatment, I met a lot of other moms, and we shared our experiences and our stories, our ups and our downs, and a few of us got together and decided that we wanted to give back to this community, to the next round of parents that were going to be facing this horrible diagnosis in that moment when the doctor looks at you and says, I'm so sorry, but it is cancer.
Mm. Were you, upon receiving that diagnosis, at least from the circle of professionals that were coming onto the case, were you getting either kind of instinctual positive vibes or direct positive reinforcement from the docs and the nurses and the other medical professionals that this was going to have the outcome that it did here as we celebrate Carlos at age 18, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. We were very fortunate. Carlos was diagnosed with one of the good cancers, if you can even call it that, and we were told that he had an 85% survival rate, which is very encouraging. But still, as parents, you wonder about that other 15%. Carlos responded very well to treatment, and we're very lucky that we live here in Connecticut, where Yale New Haven Children's Hospital and Connecticut Children's Medical Center are such well-renowned children's hospitals, and to have the best in pediatric oncology care.
And what is also amazing is the tolerance of a 2.5, 3-year-old going all the way to age 5, kind of living a world that's scheduled around chemotherapy.
Well, you know, people don't understand how long children are in treatment for. That's one of the first things that you learn about this, is because children are growing, their little cells are multiplying at a very fast rate, and treatment has to begin immediately. The day that he was diagnosed, we were not able to go home. We had to go immediately to the hospital. And he had two little girls, a 7- and 8-year-old, getting off the bus a half an hour after he was diagnosed, and the doctor looked at me and said, "I'm really sorry, but you have to find somebody else to pick them up because you can't go home." And for 10 days, we were in the hospital. That afternoon, we were having him prepped for surgery the next day, beginning red blood transfusions, platelet transfusions, prepping him for chemotherapy. It was quite frightening, and it all happened very fast.
Now, as you're growing this now established network of support that is Circle of Care, and folks, if you're interested in learning more about the organization, I'd advise you to go to thecircleofcare.org, check out their website. As you're meeting folks, how is the current state of the upheaval in the health insurance industry, which we're actually coincidentally going to hear about more about from the president of Access Health CT in the next segment on the program this morning? How much of the dire support that you're able to provide involves financial challenges versus emotional challenges or medical challenges for the families that come to Circle of Care?
We were very lucky. When Carlos was diagnosed in 2001, my husband worked for a large corporation, and we had very good insurance. That wouldn't be true today, and it's not true for most of the people that we work with. One of the most frightening statistics about this, after you get past what the survival rate is for the children, is the devastation to the family. Over 70% of families in the state of Connecticut experience a financial crisis due to their child's diagnosis. 70%. That is a huge number. There are very limited resources for them for financial assistance. The economic downturn changed a lot of the way nonprofits work to support families and what cash is available to support families. And we find them coming to us after 3 or 4 months of treatment, really unable to pay their mortgage or their rent or their utility bills or their car payments to get to treatment. Mm-hmm. When a child is diagnosed, treatment is, as I said, immediate, but it also is 3 to 4 days a week for the first year. So generally, one parent has to stop working, and you're cutting your income in half. The other statistic is that, generally speaking, nobody has more than 2 months worth of savings in the bank.
Right. And the person, if the individual, if the child is lucky enough to have two parents in the household and both of those parents worked and were getting lucky enough to get insurance through work, and then one of them has to leave and cannot go on the other parent's policy for whatever reason, and are forced to, well, or even if they can, they're typically forced to have to subsidize a significantly higher payment to bring that extra person on, sometimes within just a few weeks or a couple of months' notice. But if they end up having to go on COBRA, you're not only looking at the sudden eclipsing of the income from the job, but then the outflow of the extra money to keep the other parent insured and hopefully as healthy as they can to support the recovery of the child.
Exactly. And also, it is, if the, both parents happen to be on one insurance, it is the parent who has the insurance who stays working and the other parent stops working. And often it's the other parent who has the higher income. So incomes can be cut by 60 or 70%, not just an equal 50%. The other thing is that the copays are through the roof now. It used to be that it was $20 or $25, sometimes even $10 or $15 for an office visit copay. And now it's $60 or $75. For each copay, and up to $1,000 for each hospitalization, of which there are many.
So that being said, how lucky has Circle of Care been to create a donor stream that is making a dent or moving the needle on helping the many folks who are coming to you for particularly financial assistance?
Well, we've been doing this for about 14 years now, and we work very closely with the two hospitals in the state that treat pediatric cancer, and we've developed a very strong network with all the other agencies in Connecticut that work with families to provide the kind of support that they need from the day of diagnosis through the end of treatment. Their needs the first week are very different than they are, you know, the first year and a half. It's really important to kind of be present for them in whatever their need is at the time. There's a lot of information and education that's required in the beginning and support, mentoring. They need somebody to talk to who's been through this. But after they've been in this for about a year, they really need financial help, and they need to know where to go. We've written a book that we like to call the Purple Pages, kind of a spoof on the Yellow Pages, which is a directory of all the resources that are available. And when we no longer can provide enough support, we refer them to other agencies that can also provide support, such as the Tommy Fund, who we're very honored to be doing this concert with.
Great. Well, let's invite people down, because no matter what your musical preference is, there's something about Bruce Springsteen music that really just fires up anybody, no matter where you are or the kind of music you like. And I'm gathering tramps like us the benefit in Hamden coming up on September 1st is going to be an awesome party.
It's going to be an awesome event. It's they are a very uplifting, fun, high-energy band, and everybody's going to feel good by the time they leave there. The other nice thing about this event is that it's free and open to all of our families, and we get to make them feel special, and that they're having something fun and special just for them and in their honor. September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and so the concert is kicking that off in a big way to raise awareness about childhood cancer and much-needed funds to support these families.
And while the concert is free, it's a great opportunity to get to know more about the Circle of Care organization and to make donations at that event or ahead of it to help underwrite the costs of programs like these. It's going to be an awesome concert, great sound, maybe some light effects. None of that comes for free. Of course, not just the musicians, but all the people that have to, the professionals who have to run it. So, of course, you can go to thecircleofcare.org right now to make a donation to help underwrite the concert, or just plan to bring some cash along with you to the show on September 1st. And Liz, before we let you go, just give folks an orientation as to where they have to go for the Star Catcher Music Fest on September 1st.
So the Star Catcher Music Fest is the first of what we're hoping will be an annual event. We're really excited to have tramps like us playing for us this year. It is going to be at the Hamden Town Green. The doors will open, although there are no doors, anytime before 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. Tramps Like Us is planning to go on about 7:30, 7:45, and the concert will go to about 10:30. There's ample parking at the school and all around the area at the Hamden Green. There will be police that will help to be directing people to parking to make it as easy as possible. We also have food trucks that are going to be there and some activities for the kids. So it really will be a fun night.
Excellent. Circle of care supports children with cancer and their families from the day of diagnosis through treatment and beyond. They provide direct, practical, emotional, and financial support. You can help them by learning more about them at thecircleofcare.org or just coming out for the awesome Starcatcher Music Fest with Tramps Like Us on September 1st in Hamden. Learn all about it at their website, thecircleofcare.org. We're so pleased to make the acquaintance of Liz Salguero, founder and president of this organization, now many years strong and helping so many folks in Connecticut who have heard those horrible words, your child has cancer. Liz, great to meet you. Thank you so much for the great work that you're doing, and we'll see you in Hamden on September 1st for Tramps Like Us. Well, a few times a year, we like to check in with Connecticut's Access Health CT, which is the Connecticut Health Insurance Exchange created by Connecticut's legislature in 2011 and established to satisfy the requirements for the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. We're pleased to be talking with their CEO this morning. Jim Wadley is on the line with us. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Sure, John. Thanks for having me on.
So it's interesting. We had Senator Chris Murphy on the program last week, and I was fortunate to visit with him during his walk across Connecticut recently and sitting in on one of his pop-up town meetings. The comments from the people that queued up to ask him questions or make statements certainly bore that out, including many, many people who were just so gratified because they were expressing that prior to the Affordable Care Act, they were either restricted or unable to get coverage. And now, as a result of the coverage they were able to access, they are getting the treatment that they need, or at least access to the avenues to get treated for issues themselves or with loved ones. I'm sure that this is the kind of thing that you hear every day.
It is. It is what we hear every day. And actually, as I hear you mentioning it, it kind of rejuvenates why I enjoy this role so much. Just to remind all your listeners, when Access Health began about 5 years ago, the uninsured rate in Connecticut was, depending upon the numbers it used, well over 8%. And so it has been cut in half. It's someplace between 3.5% and 4%, depending upon which organization's statistics you use, and that's a phenomenal step in the positive direction here, as well as it is allowing you. That's where you get all these stories where customers were struggling, residents struggling to find health insurance. Now everyone's guaranteed coverage, and that helps everyone in so many ways.
Well, for folks that may have maybe lost a job or are coming of age where they're getting off their parents' health care plans, or the individuals out there, which I'm sure you'd be able to quote me a number, who have not yet engaged health insurance for themselves under the Affordable Care Act, what are some of the most important things they need to know about Access Health CT?
Well, the first and foremost is for let everyone know that we're here to help them. Purchasing healthcare coverage is a very complicated and confusing process. It ranks right up there with probably filing your taxes. And so Access Health is here. If you have questions, you can call us and ask questions. We have agreements and partnerships that we do working with brokers who are in our call center to be able to help pick plans. So there's a myriad of opportunities, as well as federally qualified health centers around the state that also help can help customers enroll and things like that. So we're really here to help them through a complicated process.
And I guess it's important to clarify or remind people that Access Health CT isn't a provider. You don't write or underwrite health insurance policies.
Correct. And that's a great point, because we do get some questions from customers. We are not a provider. All we are doing is we are connecting customers with insurance carriers. Those two carriers are Anthem and Blue Cross Blue Shield. Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and ConnectiCare. And so We do the enrollment and outreach for the most part for these organizations. So that is a key distinction.
Folks that are watching national news are and have been for some time hearing about a number of companies providing healthcare plans across the country, kind of contracting. A lot of states are losing providers who are writing these policies for state residents under the Affordable Care Act or under state exchanges similar to Connecticut's, although I guess there aren't that many. First and foremost, how are the things that Connecticut people are hearing about what's happening in other places in the country, what kind of reactions are you getting to this, and is it impacting the way you're interacting with folks who are calling Access LCT?
Yeah, so there's a number of things that are taking place around the country right now, and as I think about it quickly, they fall into kind of two categories that are occurring as you look at what's going on outside of Connecticut. One category is kind of business economics working, where carriers may be deciding to step back. We've seen a number of national carriers who've decided that they no longer want to participate in the individual market. I don't necessarily see, while it's unfortunate that there's less options, I'm not sure I see that as necessarily a bad thing as much as we're seeing some of those carriers, really, their core business is not serving the individual market. So that's some of the business economics that are taking place. Mm-hmm. The second item is, right now, when you pick up, it's hard to pick up a newspaper. I've got a Wall Street Journal sitting in front of me, and or New York Times or Washington Post. You are seeing a tremendous amount of uncertainty that is coming out of Washington, D.C. At the federal level around funding of cost-sharing reductions. Are we going to repeal the Affordable Care Act? Are we not? Are we going to make changes to the Affordable Care Act? Are we not? There's a lot of uncertainty, and though that uncertainty is really driving a lot of confusion across the country. And so when health plans look at this uncertainty, they're very risk-averse. And so it's hard for them to select their rates if they can't understand what is going to happen from a business perspective in the environment. And so they ultimately may decide to leave the market. And so that's what you're seeing around the country. Mm-hmm. Connecticut has the same things that are going on. Last year we had a couple of carriers that left for business economic reasons. Right now, as we talk to the governor and lieutenant governor and his staffs, what are the things that Connecticut can do to help with the uncertainty that's coming out of Washington, D.C. to protect all of our residents with health insurance?
And what are some of the things that are in the works or on the horizon or actually in the implementation phase to counter what may be going on in Washington?
So there's a number of things that have taken place. Some of those are market stabilization efforts that Access Health has been implementing for the last 6 months. And some of those were approved by our board of directors back in the February and March timeline. Some of those are changes allowing the carriers to make some changes to the actual plan setup. Some of those have been at a national level. You're seeing open enrollment is now from November 1st to technically December 15th. So that will help the carriers with a little bit more certainty, knowing that they'll have 12 months of premiums paid from individuals who go for an entire year. That'll help with stabilization. And so some of those are some of the first things. On the next level, a little bit closer to what's going on a daily basis out of Washington, D.C., what I can say is There have been meetings that have been taking place with our insurance commissioner. Katie Wade is actively engaged looking to find ways to support Connecticut residents. We've been meeting with her, with the governor, with the lieutenant governor. So Governor Malloy and Lieutenant Governor Wyman have all been active in having conversations with the carriers and without the carriers internally as to what are some of the things that can be done to help stabilize the markets. We're kind of in the middle of that process, so it's too early to say what kind of changes can come out. But I'm cautiously optimistic that I think we're definitely going in the right direction, and I'm actually excited about those opportunities and the ability to continue to bring stabilizing efforts into Connecticut. Mm.
Well, erring on the side of caution has always been a standard operating procedure for all insurance industries. In some cases, some might argue to a fault. But has the repetitive failure of a repeal or any real unpacking dismantling of the Affordable Care Act, is that doing anything to assuage the fears and concerns of the consumers in the marketplace for here in Connecticut?
So I think there's two answers to that question. The first answer is we have about almost 100,000 Connecticut residents that are signed up with healthcare right now, and that number is pretty close to what we had last year. So that tells us we've got a pretty healthy craving for health insurance in the state of Connecticut from that perspective. Now, as we look going forward, at rates for 2018, we've seen not only in Connecticut but across the country, but I'll speak specifically to Connecticut, that some of the carriers are saying they are seeing healthy individuals drop out. So there's this thing called under enforcement of the individual mandate, which basically means people may or may not have to pay a penalty if they don't have health insurance. And so the carriers think they are seeing a small trend there and building some of that into the rates. So those things, that could be consumers dropping out, a few of them dropping out, probably 2% roughly. And so that is concerning because generally those are the individuals that everyone wants to make sure stay in the environment because they probably are healthier, and healthier drives down the cost of healthcare versus a pool of unhealthy individuals solely would end up driving up the cost. And so ultimately, we want to try to keep healthcare as affordable as possible through this process.
If you're just joining us, we're having a really interesting conversation with Jim Wadley. He is CEO of Access Health CT, Connecticut's marketplace for the Affordable Care Act. We're going to take a quick break. We've got about six more minutes with Jim. Please stick with us. We'll be back in just a couple moments. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Experience Core is a literacy tutoring program whose volunteers age 55 and over help young students become better readers. They're currently recruiting volunteers to tutor two or more mornings each week in a local elementary school or two or more afternoons weekly in a local after-school program starting in October. Training is provided, or just bring your gently used baby and teen books to the Experience Core table at the Hamden Town Center Market on Thursdays from 4 to 7 p.m. through September 30th for area children who have little access to books. If you'd like more information or learn how to help, you can call 203-752-3059 or visit the Agency on Aging's website, aoascc.org/experiencecore. Thank you for sticking with us. We are visiting with Jim Wadley. He is CEO of Access Health CT, also known as the Connecticut Health Insurance Exchange. That was created by the Connecticut Legislature back in 2011 to satisfy the requirements of the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, so-called. So, Jim, thanks for sticking with us yourself. Great information we're getting this morning. So one of the subjects that has come up in conversations that I've had with a lot of people about the state of health insurance over the past year or so has seemed to gravitate toward a lot of savings that might be able to be achieved in the area of pharmaceuticals and drugs and other products from those industries. Can you tell me a little bit if whether Access Health CT is playing a role or the exchanges in other states in terms of lobbying for or advocating or even working toward trying to find some cost savings in the procurement of large-scale purchases of medication for folks who are on health plans?
Sure. So great question. There's a number of answers that are in there, and so I'm going to start backwards from your question.
Sure.
And talk about what are some of the things that Access Health Connecticut is doing specifically, not just to pharmacy, but all of health care when it comes
to cost. Yeah.
So there's some areas that Access Health can influence, and others areas that they cannot. And so some of the areas at a larger scale, when we start talking about more specifically the pharmacy costs, I participate in something called the Healthcare Cabinet, and there are a number of committees on that Healthcare Cabinet that our organization takes part in. And that is chaired by the Lieutenant Governor, has representation from hospitals, carriers across the state. And so we get to participate in that, and I know that they are working, our cabinet is working on some recommendations that we expect to come out probably towards the end of fall around proposed potential legislative solutions to help with pharmaceutical cost savings. So that is one area that I get to participate on, and that is exciting because each one of those meetings I learn a lot. The other area that we, being Access Health, get to participate in influence costs are really around the selection of our plan designs. And so plan designs is a term for really the policy that you are purchasing from a carrier. And that policy has a myriad of coverages. It covers the number of number of days that you could be covered in a hospital. It could cover number of visits to outpatient facilities of a myriad of types. Mm. All kinds of things, co-pays, deductibles, all of those. That's part of your policy. So this year, Access Health made a significant number of changes in our policies so that carriers can start offering and being a little bit more creative, not a little, actually a lot more creative in their plan designs that will ultimately lead to lesser expensive plans. And so we expect to see that through a number of places, but most specifically, about a week or so ago, our health plan advisory committee had its first meeting of the fall or summer, actually, now that we're still in summer, talking about some of these plan designs. And so over the next few months, we'll see a lot of changes there. And I know that pharmacy costs and pharmacy benefits are going to be some of the decision points that we potentially make some changes to with our plan design. So those two places, Healthcare Cabinet and decisions around plan designs, are the places that Access Health can really influence some of these costs. Now, back to your first question, which is one of those things that right now everyone keeps talking Obamacare this and Obamacare that. What the exchanges are a mechanism for consumers, Connecticut residents or whatever state you live in, to come in and enroll in healthcare. That is what we have spent so much time on. We talk about what is our enrollment numbers at a national level. We talk about what is our disenrollment, all of these things. But, John, the thing that we as a country need to start focusing on are costs of healthcare. So these are actually the drivers of why healthcare costs go up. The big hitters, in no particular order, are the costs of physicians and doctors that we're going to, the costs that hospitals are putting into the system, pharmacy costs, facilities that people are going to for tests and things like that. These are the big drivers to why healthcare costs keep going up. So if you take each one of those, and each one goes up 4%, or pick whatever you want a number for inflation, then all of a sudden you've got a large price increase on an annual basis that you see the insurance department talking about increases. And that's what's driving those. That is where, at a national and Connecticut legislative perspective, I would love to see us start, and we're seeing it, start moving our conversation away from enrollment and number of carriers on exchanges, and talk about how we can help our carriers offer and control costs. I don't have an answer for any of those, but those are some of the big things that nationally and locally we really need to be focusing on.
Mm. It's also said that as I was hearing earlier today, the White House has sent assurances across the insurance industry that subsidies under the Affordable Care Act will continue this month. And certainly the lack of communication or continuity in those commitments to subsidies has to be also wreaking havoc when it comes to trying to project costs, and appears to be creating a situation where, once again, the companies are hedging at the anticipation of losing them, and therefore building that into rate increases.
That is true. So today you did hear that the August payments were going to be made, and now for the next 3 or 4 weeks, the industry will be stressing over whether the September payments will be made. And ultimately, while those are for the 2017 plan year, what's really, back to some of our opening comments, is driving the uncertainty for 2018 is, will those subsidies be paid in 2018 or not? Because once rates are set, carriers can't change their rates. So take a worst case scenario of carriers, we set rates without that assumption that cost sharing reductions will continue to be paid. We get to January, they stop being paid. It guarantees a 20% loss for carriers for the entire year. And that is, when we talk about uncertainty, that is what carriers are incredibly nervous about. And so they're looking for ways to hedge their bet. And in some cases around the country, they're choosing to hedge their bet by saying they're going to leave the market.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking all the time to catch us up on things that are going on and how the things that are going on across the country are impacting what's going on here with Connecticut. Folks, if you do not have health insurance, you've lost a job, you're aging out of your parents' plan, or for some reason decided maybe you had insurance under the Affordable Care Act, but then were feeling healthy enough that you didn't and you'd like to re-engage. You can always call 211 info line to get hooked through Access Health CT, or just go directly to their website, accesshealthct.com. Jim Wadley is with us. He is CEO of Access Health CT, the Connecticut Health Insurance Exchange, which was created by the Connecticut legislature to satisfy the requirements of the Federal Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Jim, learned a lot. Thanks so much for talking with our audience this morning, and we'll come back around and visit with you again toward the beginning of the new year. Well, it's been a while since we caught up with Kathy Gary Ayers. She is CEO of the Healthy Eyes Alliance here in Connecticut. Imagine a child in school who doesn't know what they can't see properly. and has the learning experience handicapped from an early age, or being an adult who's blind or suffering from low vision and deteriorating eye disease and can't work or support themselves or their families. If you could prevent blindness, wouldn't you want to help those in need to live a sight-filled life? Well, Kathy is part of this important organization that's working to those ends, as well as expanding safety, eye safety in the workforce, and working to educate people and provide resources to prevent sight-related issues with the Healthy Eyes Alliance in Connecticut. So it's been a year or so since we've talked to Kathy, so we wanted to catch up. Also on this occasion of the end of the five-year anniversary year is in sight, Kathy, and you're looking forward to six.
We sure are. We're looking forward to the future. We'd like to think that we're on the cusp of planning the next 5 years, actually. And we appreciate the opportunity to reconnect with you and with your audience. We're very, very excited. We've kicked off a campaign called the Campaign to Save Sight to, of course, increase our resources, something that we have to do all of the time in order to provide our free vision screenings and follow-up services to those people in the community that do not have the ability to afford vision care on their own. So we're very excited to be able to part of this recording.
The cool thing about the Healthy Eyes Alliance is that you folks not only partner in situations where partnerships existed before with other entities and have gone away for whatever reason. You also dovetail services that are critically important and step in and step up where they're needed and can't be afforded. So there's a lot to talk about in the next 15 minutes or so. But the thing that is also interesting as we kind of look back over the past 5 years is, 4 years and 10 months ago, I guess there were a lot of people that were looking at the Healthy Eyes Alliance here in Connecticut that just became an independent organization saying, you probably won't make the year, never mind five, right?
Well, the predictions would be, I guess, if you looked at the textbook cases, that our situation 5 years ago was one that was an adventurous journey for us that didn't guarantee a positive outcome of sustainability, but we've proven them wrong. 5 years ago, we separated from a national parent organization, and we went on our own. Our corporate headquarters is located in New Haven, Connecticut, but before that, for many years, we operated not only in Connecticut, but in New York and New Jersey. And we had decided that it was time that we went independent from the national organization and established our own incorporated entity here. And we have done it. We've survived 5 years. We've reorganized. We've kept raising money. We've expanded our programming. We've had funders increase their money to us that they were given in the past. And we've maintained the very important services that are out in the community. In fact, in 5 years, we vision screened 26,861 underserved preschool children in very poor neighborhoods and 2,600 adults in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut that were diabetics that were in danger of contracting eye disease. We were able to help them. It's just an amazing history that we've had, and it's been a ride, but we're happy we are where we're at, and we look forward to many years in business.
Yeah, and you've also, when you talk about fundraising and when people think across the huge landscape of worthy agencies and nonprofits where they're going to put their $20 or their $200 mm-hmm. or their $2,000, you really put every dollar to work. $1.16 million plus mm-hmm. Already raised over the course of 5 years to support the preschool vision screening program, which is also pretty impressive, as well as almost $120,000 worth of vouchers for folks who wouldn't otherwise be able to get eye exams and glasses. So that's pretty incredible. And that's just scratching the surface of the stats. As a matter of fact, our listeners may have heard some of those stats already on our PSAs for your campaign to save sight. So that's great. So let's get into looking toward the future. As we move into year six for the Healthy Eyes Alliance. And let's talk about those preschool vision screenings, because the school year is lumbering toward us through August. And you're counting down the days till you launch a new school year of vision screening. Tell us a little bit about that program.
We really, really are. And it's very exciting, John, because if I can just take I'll just take Connecticut, although, like I said, we do the screenings in New York and New Jersey as well, but we've already received commitments from at least six or seven major foundations in Connecticut that will allow us to do free vision screenings in Hartford, in the Valley, New Haven, Meriden, Waterbury, Fairfield County, and the Bridgeport, especially, where there's a huge need. We were very happy at the end of the spring to receive a very large grant from the Worth Family Foundation, which is probably one of the most philanthropic of all, foundations. They're all philanthropic, but one of the most generous foundations that give to Healthy Eyes Alliance and are located here in the state and very generous. To many, many nonprofits throughout the state. Peter and Pam Worth were just amazing advocates of ours. So we are so thrilled that they and their family foundation have chosen to give to us again. So with $60,000 that they gave us, we can screen 1,000 children. And that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And within 1,000 children being screened, we guess 10 to 20% of those could use vision care that they're not getting.
And as we pointed out in the introduction, which you guys provided, so many of these kids are so young that they really either don't know they may have a vision difficulty or they may not know how to articulate that there's a problem. I mean, it's one thing to have, your eyes are burning or your eyes are hurting and mommy, my eyes hurt. But it's another thing to have the subtle vision issues that maybe too complex or intense to be able to really describe what the problem is. So a lot of these kids probably don't say anything. They just suffer, and then that shows up in their academics. It shows up in their home life, and could create a really shaky foundation for their entire future.
Absolutely. In fact, you could be our number one spokesman, John, because you really have beautifully summarized what the effect can be. First of all, amblyopia and strabismus are examples of blinding eye diseases that children often indicate that there's often an indication that they have this only through a screening or vision exam. The children don't know that they have a problem. They don't know how to see any other way. They were perhaps this way since birth.
Mm.
So they don't know the difference. And the parents certainly don't know the difference because the child, as you said, isn't talking about the eyes burning or the eyes being really red, something piercing, just having pain or some other very obvious physical attribution. Mm. And so what they literally go through school not knowing. Now, amblyopia, I will take as an example. If it is not detected and treated by age 7, a child's eye that will have the amblyopia condition will literally shut off and stop seeing. Mm. And the way that happens is that the messages from that eye to the brain have already been thwarted. But if they continue to go untreated, if we can't wake up that eye through treatment of patching or sometimes even surgery is required, then that eye will literally stop operating and the child will have no sight from that eye and go through life with one eye operating. And I know adults who have had this condition.
Mm.
And if the parent doesn't know about it and can't help the child to get treatment, then it's a bad prescription. So we believe in screening very early in a child's life. 2.5 years to 3 years is not too early. And we believe in helping to get the child to the doctor if we indicate a problem, and then case managing, somewhat like a case manager in a social welfare office would do.
Sure.
Case managing the family, the doctor, the school, and the child to make sure that they get the treatment they need. And then we get reports about, oh, yes, that child received treatment. They're now seeing well. They're either being patched for amblyopia, and that's going well. The child has glasses. We make sure that we don't just do a screening and walk away. We make sure that we treat the child that needs us in a way that we would if they were our own children.
Yes.
And the families that we help really appreciate this because
Excellent.
They're busy. They're working 3 jobs sometimes during the week. They have very little time and very little past experience to know how to access medical care and how to pay for it,
okay.
which is another thing we help with.
Great. Kathy Gary Ayres is CEO of the Healthy Eyes Alliance. HealthyEyesAlliance.org is their website where you could go to access a vast amount of resources, whether you are a parent, an educator, or just someone who's interested in making sure Connecticut residents have the most protected opportunity to save their sight if they have a host of issues or illnesses or injuries. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. We just have about 5 minutes left. So the other thing, aside from the 2,600 adults last year, over the past 5 years, who you've helped with diabetes issues, you have launched the Diabetic Retinopathy Project. Let's hear a little bit about that, and then we'll move into talking a little bit about workforce eye safety. And
sure.
We'll wrap things up for today.
That would be great. The Diabetic Retinopathy Project is really our signature project that we have developed completely on our own, and we're very excited about this. It was born out of a CDC grant from the Center for Disease Control when we did a whole project in New York, in the state of New York, trying to educate people about the need to pay attention to their eyes if they were diabetic, if they're smokers, if they have cancer. All of those interrelated chronic diseases affect your eyes and your eye health. So what we did was we developed a program. We go into a community health center. First, we have to raise the money. Then we go into a community health center, and we offer free vision screenings to what is normally a group of 500 diabetics or those that are in danger of receiving diabetics, pre-diabetics, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
And we also give them educational workshops so they understand about the eye and how to take care of their eyes, especially because they're in this diabetic or pre-diabetic condition. Then we also make sure that they are case managed to get the kind of medical attention they need from the optometrist or ophthalmologist at the community health center, and make sure we track them because the doctors available only come in once or twice a month. So we make sure they get appointments, they show up at appointments, and they get the treatment they need. And this really goes a long way in helping adults who are underserved, many of them underinsured, by the way, or no insurance.
Not insured, yeah.
Yeah, and many of them obese, which relates to diabetes, which relates to diabetic eye disease. Make sure that those people are treated and receive the attention that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So we're very proud of that particular program.
Great. Well, in the last couple minutes we have left, let's mm-hmm. shift to the rest of us in the workforce. I mean, mm-hmm. You could see where people who work in the trades, who work with dangerous equipment, who are landscapers and things, would be much more predisposed to eye injuries. But there's also, if you'll excuse the pun, a real focus from the Healthy Eyes Alliance on just folks who have to sit in front of computers for long periods mm-hmm. of time. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll wrap it up.
Sure. Thank you. We recognize that probably some of the most at-risk people are those that are using a computer almost all day long. I'm one of those folks, so I'm very conscious of this. And we try to offer educational information with our brochures and trainings that will teach them about how to best ergonomically set up their station, their computer station, so that it not only is good for their bodies and their bones and their the way they're sitting, et cetera,
correct,
but their eyes.
And such, yep.
And that's very, very important. And one of the other things that I have to mention is that children using iPhones and being on iPads and in front of computers is a real issue, because in the next few years, I think we're going to see an increase in the number of children who have eye issues just based on the amount of time they spend looking at their devices or being on computers and iPads.
Okay. Well, that's something we'll keep an eye on as well.
You bet.
And, and get back to you once we start seeing some definitive data coming out on
Absolutely.
That. Perhaps data that the Healthy Eyes Alliance right here in Connecticut could help provide. Maybe I'm setting you up for your next special project, which means
that
you've
that's
got to make some more money. And that means people need to go to healthyeyesalliance.org to not just learn about your organization, but find ways to support it, either individually through donations or perhaps in conjunction with a social or service group or their workplace or their entire community. There's all kinds of resources. You go to healthyeyesalliance.org. You can link then to be connected with them on social networks, on Facebook and other social networks, so that when new developments occur or there's sudden and important news that could help enhance or save your site, you'll be able to get it in the moment, right, when it comes out on their social network. So, Kathy Gary-Ayres, thank you so much. Great to visit with you again. Kathy is CEO of Healthy Eyes Alliance here in Connecticut. And we will be talking to you again soon on this occasion of the closeout of your fifth anniversary as an independent service nonprofit here in Connecticut and moving on to the sixth with a very important agenda of saving sight here in Connecticut. Great job. Job, Kathy, keep it up.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.